Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good Friday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. It is December 13th, 2024. 12 days from Christmas and the boys are out and about and on the road. We are broadcasting live from the French Quarter in New Orleans at Hotel Monteleone. Got a bunch of listeners who have reached out to us that are making the trek to New Orleans, want to know where we're doing the show from today and Monday. Today we are at this very historic and beautiful and awesome hotel. Monday we'll be at our favorite restaurant in New Orleans with our buddy Christian over at Brennan. So we are fired up. It has been an outstanding travel experience to this point, and it all culminates with the Commanders and the Saints on Sunday, a win, and the boys are on the precipice of punching a postseason ticket.
It'll go a long way, man. NFC win, a chance to bank 9 wins overall, dramatically exceeding their preseason win-loss total, according to all the experts and everybody in between. So it's a big one, man. And New Orleans is vulnerable. I mean, the Shanahan axiom, which is now a Grant and Danny axiom, dare I even say it, not who you play, it's when you play them. First 2 weeks of the season, as we're looking ahead to the schedule, going, oh, my God, you got to face this team in December? The Saints have scored 50 a game. They're killing people. They're unbelievable. Now, no Derek Carr, no Chris Olave, no Rashid Shaheed, no Taysom Hill for those third and ones, those fourth and ones, or goal line situations. A walking, wounded, beat-up team that's already fired its head coach that's on a quarterback that I don't know much about, to be honest with you. I don't know if you could play obscure, you know, backup Big Ten power forward or NFL quarterback, and I wouldn't be able to get it right for the most part. They are ripe for the taking. You could bank a win here and do an awful lot of good in terms of the deposits to get yourself into the postseason.
Jake Haener actually appeared in 7 games as a quarterback to this point, and he's thrown about 29 passes. He has never made a start, and that will change on Sunday. He played his college football kind of in anonymity, largely, at Washington initially and then Fresno State. He was drafted in the fourth round, about 127th overall. So I point that out because that's kind of Kirk Cousins' range. I mean, it's not like there's never been a good story of a guy who got a late start after being drafted in the fourth round. It's very, very rare. You know, Cousins, Dak Prescott, there's a couple of guys along the way. But for the most part, by now you kind of know, don't you? If he's not playing, it's probably for a good reason. As a fourth-round pick who collegiately was not at a power program at the end of his time. But what an opportunity for him, and what a great chance for Washington to try to suffocate him in this offense. I mean, to your point, they have a fired head coach, Dennis Allen's gone. They have a broken quarterback in Derek Carr who's not playing. Their deep threat is out. Their bully ball tight end short yardage guy that you referenced is unavailable. Their best player, really their exotic weapon, Alvin Kamara, has not practiced this week with an illness, and we still don't really know what his status is going to be in terms of how capable he'll be on Sunday if he goes. And you mentioned Chris Olave, who's actually awesome, like a great football
player. He's really good.
As good a receiver maybe as there is in that division, and Chris Olave is unavailable as well. So it's just a Saints team, frankly, that you got to beat. Like, there's no way around it. There's no reason to dress it up any more than that. you get the luxury. You get the beauty of coming to New Orleans in December when the Saints aren't really playing for anything against a team that is missing more of its good players than are going to play in this game. There's not a whole lot else that needs to be said. If they don't beat the Saints, then all of the playoff talk and the chances of getting in will still be doing it. But it doesn't matter that much because these are the kind of games, if you're a good football team, that you should win. But I'm just excited for the road trip for Commanders fans. There's a lot of people coming down here. We bumped into many of them at the airport yesterday. Saw a bunch of burgundy and gold just in my little time walking around the French Quarter already this morning. I was joking with our buddy Christian today as we were getting set up here to do the show. And he said, look, you don't always get a huge traveling party from NFL cities to Cleveland. You know, not every city necessarily is a destination. When your team's playing in New Orleans, you roll out the red carpet a little bit. And I think that's going to happen from this fan base.
Yeah, I mean, we experienced this a handful of years ago, dramatically different time for our organization, than what New Orleans was doing. That was a perennial 11, 12, 13-game winner. Drew Brees was setting passing records. And, you know, they were a juggernaut. Sean Payton was still the coach. And all those faces are pretty much gone. This, you know, this organization has turned over in multiple ways. They're in salary cap hell. It's they're not in a good place, talking about New Orleans. Now, New Orleans itself is a great place. This is one of those where when that schedule comes out, you circle it, right? With all due respect to Cincinnati, to, as you said, to Cleveland, to, you know, you could pick your very okay tier three, tier four city. There's nothing wrong with those places. There's a lot right here, right? We've already had a listener come up into this boardroom where we're broadcasting, alcoholic beverage in hand as it's barely 1 o'clock local time.
Hilarious.
You know, he's like, I got this Sazerac, and I made my own bitters, and I don't even know what people are talking
about.
I'll
do you one better than that. We got off the elevator today, and my wife looks over. There's a bar here in the hotel, and it was packed. And everyone is dressed to the nines, like gowns and suits. I mean, this was at, I don't know, like 10:50 in the morning. She's like, what is going on? Why are all these people dressed up and at this party? And I said, I think it's a holiday party. And I just thought that was, you know, the right answer. And she's like, it's 10:50. And I'm like, that's a great point. But back home, and I think in most cities, but certainly in D.C., our events are in the evening. We do things around dinner, around happy hour. This is a daytime place.
Daytime.
So at some point, we're probably going to have to close this door. We are in the boardroom here at the Hotel Monteleone because they've got a live band performing at a massive holiday party with hundreds of people right down the hall for one of the biggest lawyers in the South, like a guy who's on every billboard down here. And I just walked in. I don't know if you checked it out at all. I mean, it looks like the nicest wedding you've ever been in.
I know.
And there's a live band on stage that's ready to rock. But it's just the vibes are cool. Everybody's very friendly, which I love. And the best part about our travel, seamless. We made it without issue, not a single incident, despite all of the consternation and the angst, all of the fretting from 24-year-old Ryan Clary. We made it. We got here. No issues at all.
We got to our connecting flight in Charlotte 5 minutes before boarding. And
ended up being about 10 because they pushed it back a few.
They did a couple minutes.
Just as you would expect they would with us having to hoof it through the airport.
Indeed. You would have thought that Grant had discovered gravity. Like, you would have thought that Sir Grant Newton over there had given human beings the single greatest achievement in world history.
I was pretty careful not to rub it in, I thought.
I disagree with you. You were tap dancing, painting imaginary circles around yourself, yelling about Harry Stamper, doing your shoulder punch thing. When Grant gets really excited, people need to know, like, he's in on a bit so hard, and everyone else is kind of like, okay, I get it, it's a bit too. Your shoulder gets worn out. There's a punch, there's a push, there's a let's go, there's a tackling. The amount of self-congratulation and the amount of I'm like Tom Hanks in Castaway. I invented fire. You were so happy. And rub it right in Ryan's face. And listen, I guess you were right. He was wrong. So enjoy it.
Depends on who you ask. Yeah. I mean, it could have been way. I think I really could have rubbed it in a lot more.
You held back.
I basically spent 1 minute saying, so we made it, right? Or we didn't. We're going to get on the plane, right?
Yeah,
I did a little bit of that. But it should be acknowledged. He spent 2 days.
Yes.
being a lot to deal with about it. So the idea that we should just show up and no one should say anything, I disagree with that. Mister, you're still mad about Chase Young and having to hear that he was going to be good. So, yeah, I did at one point. I said, what's this circle around me? Oh, it's the circle of correctness.
Yeah.
There were a couple of mentions. It was about 2 minutes. I didn't beat him up about it, and then we moved on with our life. But welcome to New Orleans. You got here without an issue.
You're here, buddy.
I know. I'm here, and I'm stunned, by the way, because that whole flight there, getting to Charlotte, I thought we were done. I thought we were toast.
Dalvin.
I mean, we had to wait on the tarmac or whatever. Like, we didn't take off right away.
Never do on an airplane.
I know, but still, I still thought we would be late. I thought this flight would not make it to New Orleans.
This is true.
And we're here, though. We are here.
And it wasn't even, by the way, like, your initial fear, if you remember, the first time I zinged him was actually, so that he always needs something to worry about. Mm-hmm. So the original, the day before, the anxiety was we weren't going to make our original
flight. He's like, let's tape the whole show and leave it too.
It was a 7:55 flight, mind you. We get off the air at 6:30. We were going to leave at about 6:15 and re-rack something for a couple minutes on the back end. And by God, that wouldn't have been enough. So then, early in the day, we find out our flight's been pushed back to 8 o'clock. Well, now we don't have to, or 9 o'clock, rather. So now we don't have to worry about the first flight. We're going to make it, but let's panic about the second flight. So that was the new thing. So we get through security. We get to our gate at about 6:57 yesterday, mm-hmm. an hour before the original flight. And Darius and I went and had a nice sit-down dinner, just chatted it up, caught up about our families and how everything's going. Ryan's wandering, or you're doing your thing where you're not in order to be found for 40 minutes walking around an airport.
Yeah,
and
let's get some steps in.
Yeah, everyone's like, "Where's Danny?" Nobody knows. You're at the C terminal for some reason. But yeah,
we got there. I got a cookie. I got a really
Ryan
good
got
chocolate
a cookie.
Chip cookie. Yeah,
that cookie.
Really good.
Can I say that cookie was not even by airport standards, that was a great cookie.
It was a great cookie. It wasn't like what I'm looking for, but still, great, fantastic cookie. Like, I really enjoyed it. So, I had a great time. I enjoyed the airport. We got here in time, so I'm just glad to spend a little fellowship with you guys. And we're about to have lunch.
So, we showed up at the airport at right around midnight last night.
Yeah.
And we come down to baggage claim, and as we're coming down the escalator, there's our buddy Christian.
There he is.
Who runs Brennan's, which is one of the most famous restaurants in the country here in New Orleans. Was named one of the 10 best countries in, restaurants in the country last year, I believe. And he's standing there. He's got the tray and drinks on the tray, and he's in a suit, and he's calling us from the bottom of the escalator. I mean, the right away, you could tell, like, nobody rolls out a red carpet that is more accommodating and friendly and just over-the-top nice than him. So we're coming down the escalator.
Yep.
And he goes, have some drinks. So Darius, Ryan, and I reach right in and grab a drink. I don't know what we drank exactly.
So there was two options, the champagne, which is industry standard, and then a New Orleans. Now, this is it, cocktails everywhere, but it's kind of a New Orleans original. They're known for it. A little Sazerac.
Sazerac.
Looking for Sazerac.
Basically, that the way I would describe Sazerac mm-hmm. is Sazerac is, I'm going to say, like a moonshine. Like a potent, powerful moonshine.
No, it's. I think it's whiskey based with another kind of a bit of alcohol, some flavoring, bitters, little lemon in there. It depends on how you make it.
It kicks you in the ribs.
Well,
it's a sipper, not a gulper.
Yeah, it's not one of those like, oh, I'm going to knock it back because I got $4 at closing here, and I'm going to do one shot of the turpentine.
Well, I don't think Clary has had his Sazerac before.
Yeah, I have not.
So he just tries to throw the thing back like a shot.
And this was great. So it was clear, with all due respect, you're my guy, you're our guy, Ryan, but you're going to catch some here.
Yeah.
Ryan didn't know what he didn't know. He thinks, oh, this is like a champagne.
He thinks we're just being given a little tequila to throw back.
Yeah, or not even. He's like, because champagne, you take a gulp of that, you're fine.
Oh,
right?
You could smell it wasn't champagne.
Yeah, so he thinks it's champagne-like, I think, in my
did
mind.
Did you? There's no way, because the smell, like, but before I even got it toward my nose, I thought, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, no, because I just thought it was champagne. Like, that's genuinely what I thought.
The smell didn't tip you off.
I didn't smell it. I did not smell it. I thought I was drinking champagne. And
or something, or some equivalent. Like, oh,
yeah.
It's a flavor. It's a mixed drink. It's flavored.
Yeah,
it's
like
got a neat little deal. So he knocks it back, like, takes a gulp of it, right, and goes, ah!
Yeah.
There was a loud noise.
It was very loud.
People in the airport looked over.
Everyone at baggage claim, like, it was this, like, it was one part shock, one part, like, oh, no, like, a little bit of panic.
But it was also one of those, if you take a shot, yes. and then you try to talk right away, and you cough at the same time, and then you your lungs.
Yeah, it was so much pain. It was great. Like, I loved it. Like,
great.
I mean, it was solid.
I don't think the point is to be great.
No, I mean, it was solid. It was solid. I enjoyed it. I will do another one of those, and I will not have that reaction, so I'll be prepared.
Yeah, you will be.
But
I mean, he sounded like he was trying to scare a kid or something.
Yeah, I was
like,
dead.
Like the way you'd like someone around the corner go, boo! But it was like that, plus like shock and a little bit of fear. Oh, yeah. It was so good.
I was scared.
So then we leave the airport. Dad had to get his bag.
Believe it or not.
Because we have to carry the Comrex with us at all times.
Yep.
Darius goes on these trips petrified that we won't get on the air. Like, every minute of every day is spent wondering.
Rightfully so, by the way.
Are we going to get on the air? Because if we doesn't, then, like, our very nice boss becomes not nearly as nice. You do not want one of those phone calls.
He goes to 11, by the way, on that. Like, he puts up with a lot of stuff with us and the Junks and JP and B-Mitch, I'm sure. And, like, things go, and it's like, whatever, he's very nice. But that is his trigger. Like, if you don't get us on air, it is a rage.
So, Dad, you decided to keep the Comrex on you. And then you checked your gigantic suitcase.
Yeah, I have. I'm not a frequent traveler, so I only have one.
So you
suitcase.
Pack everything when you do travel, just in case you get stuck.
Just in case, you just never know what kind of clothes you need, what kind of underwear you need.
PlayStation 5 in case the Madden League is a game.
I wish I could have bought the PlayStation 5. That'd be great. I didn't do that. But yes, I checked in my bag and carried the Comrex with me as my carry-on. Correct.
And you never let it out of your sight, basically. Like,
no.
You're touching it at all times.
It was the nuclear football. It was like chained to his wrist.
I may have stood up five or six different times to make sure that it didn't shift too much in the overstorage. Yeah, I can't let that Comrex get away
from
me.
How big is his suitcase, though?
It's a big suitcase. He would – now, when you sleep on GP, is Darius would nod off. Because I was sitting next to him. We're sitting across the aisle from each other. He would nod off – jerk awake and then go up and look at the Comrex, make sure it was still
there. Just to make sure.
So, like, clearly he was like, I'd love to have some restful sleep, but I can't because of the Comrex.
All I could think about was the Comrex.
All I could think about.
Yeah.
But we're on the air.
We're here. We're all on the air.
The sense of relief for Darius, because we had to punch through some firewalls and do all these things.
Oh, so much stuff.
Grown-ups and IT people and terms and acronyms, I don't know.
So at one point, Grant looks in and goes, I should be seeing Google here.
Like, should be.
I'm like, I can't help with that.
I mean, it sounds silly, but if I don't see Google, it's not working.
I'm busting chops.
Correctly, you are.
But it's
that's what I can offer.
Well, there's a level of sophistication that is we need the Blue Origin to reach it. And we're down here on the earth going, you know, the internet sometimes shows Google.
Well, I thought I was being helpful, and I'm like, so I do the show sometimes from this place, but the letters on the connection are different. I might need to do like an HLR, not a ULT. I'm like, does that help you at all? And he's like, it's definitely not the correct letters, but I think I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it was helpful in the sense that, anyway, can I see it?
So we got on, and the relief in Darius.
You would have thought, I mean, he was, you remember in Captain America Civil War when Cap gets on the elevator.
You sleep on that movie, by the way.
It's first of all, that's disrespectful. It's in my top five Marvel movies. All right, it's actually my number two. If you could just settle down, actually number three. We talked about it the other day. Point is, he gets in the elevator and it's all Hydra agents, and they're going to fight him. And then the one guy sweating a giant bullet on his left temple, and that's when he goes, "Before you do this, and we want to get off." And then they fight.
That's me.
Darius had the sweat temple.
Yeah.
Before we were on at 156.
Yeah.
Well, I saw it.
Yep. That's very true. Lots of sweating. It's nervous sweat. I got to make sure that we're on air because I can't have us be down here so many miles away from Washington, D.C.
And then we'll never go anywhere again.
That'll be the end of our traveling. Yeah. So it was. I feel like all the responsibility was on me.
It worked out.
It did.
But we get out of the airport. He finally gets his bag.
Mm-hmm.
Took a little while, but that's fine. It happens.
Yeah, it's fine. A lot of people waiting for their bags.
It's midnight. Nobody wants to go anywhere.
There's such good shot busting, by the way. And we're like, hey, Darius, is your bag coming? And he's like, I don't know.
Of course, it was on the last wave.
It was the last wave.
Christian leads us out to the parking lot. Yep. We got an awesome party bus, which was sick. So, of course, Ryan.
I didn't choke on my champagne, by the way.
Like, that's very nice of you.
The champagne was fantastic.
Ryan, Darius, and I start figuring out, okay, how do we get the phone to play some music in here. Danny immediately starts just looking at Instagram reels. We didn't see him again the rest of the trip. Every now and then we start blaring some music or something. We're like, Danny, what about this song? He looks up, looks back at it, you know, right back at his phone. Like we're bothering him.
He could not wait to get to the hotel to get away from us.
I sent a video to a couple of my buddies of like just the party bus, you know, the vibe. And it was like Ryan's dancing. You know, we got the music blaring. We're he's trying to show us some rapper who's horrendous and mumbles.
He's like, here's young Jeezy Diaper. And I'm like, yeah. I guess.
Everyone's Lil, some initials. They all stink, every single one of them. So anyway, we're doing all that. And you could just kind of see Danny in the back. And at one point, he makes eye contact with my phone and, like, sees I'm recording. And he just stares at me like he's going to punch me. And so someone responded, like, Danny's already miserable to be there. Like, it's been 5 minutes. You just wanted to be in your bed, I think.
Yeah, I'm tired. Long enough day. And then when like, one of these songs will start, and it's 45 seconds in, and you actually ask a legitimate question where you go, when does the song start? Because it's like 45 seconds of like a Casio keyboard, kind of like a stupid beat that a child would come up with. And then it's, yep, yep, yep. No words yet, just the occasional okay. affirmation that I'm going to speak at some point. There will be some rapping at some point in this song, which you haven't heard it yet. So, yeah, I'm ready for the trip to be.
Who was the guy that I liked a little bit? He had the worst rap
from
name
Dallas,
of all time.
From Dallas,
yeah,
that guy?
It was quite literally probably the worst rap name I've ever heard.
It was like Overweight Steve or something. What was
No. Big the Plug.
Big the Plug.
Yeah, this is there's an X in there, too.
Well, yeah, this is Danny the
Owl. Well,
out.
Now I'm out. I mean, yeah. It's the worst name ever.
It's not. He's silly. Grant loved it.
Loved his little song. Of all of the songs you've ever played, that was actual rap. There were lyrics.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about his voice, right? It was a reasonable effort to rhyme words.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Which is what I'm looking for rather than just like.
Well, I mean, Lil Uzi Vert does the same thing as well.
I'm sure he does.
Lil Uzi does.
Lil TJ, that song was really
good.
Lil
TJ does?
Lil TJ, yeah.
I don't believe you.
Lil Uzi Vert?
Lil everybody. Yeah. Everybody's a Lil.
I'm a Lil out is what I am.
That's fine.
I get sized for Lil Jordan Humphrey.
Okay.
The wide receiver for the Denver Broncos. That's my guy. Speaking of which, the Commanders in New Orleans to take on the Saints. They got to get themselves a win. Let's get into this matchup. And how things look like they're stacking up for Washington next on Grant and Danny live from New Orleans. This is our, what, like one every 8 year trip?
It's what we do. It's our bye annual.
I think that sounds about right. You're locked into the Fan.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. We are live in New Orleans at the Hotel Monteleone in the French Quarter. Thrilled to be coming your way from the Big Easy ahead of Sunday's game. I want to talk Jake Haener here. I always get excited when my football team is about to play a quarterback that's never started, who has not played particularly well off the bench, who doesn't have much of a track record that screams, this guy's going to be good. But I also know, Danny, that there's a lot of fans, and I'm guessing you're one of them, who get nervous in those situations.
Yeah.
Because there's no expectation, really, for Jake Haener. It's just free and easy time. If you go out there and you play badly, you were supposed to. You're Jake Haener, and the Saints aren't very good, and they're supposed to lose the game. That can be a little bit scary. On the year, he has completed 48% of his passes. He has one touchdown and no interceptions. Again, coming off the bench in seven games. He's really only thrown passes in like three games on the year. The most we've seen him play was at the Chargers. They lost 26-8, and he went 9 of 17 for 122 yards at a 36-yard completion in that game. But I'll give him credit for this. He has not thrown an interception this season in 29 pass attempts, which, again, not even a full game's worth. But for a young guy coming in when his team's struggling, you know, throwing from behind, I would say that that's, if nothing else, I know he's completed less than half of his passes. That's something you can hang his hat on to this point.
Yeah, because you think you're pressing, trying to come back into the game. You're forcing something, maybe a 50-50 ball. You take a shot, and maybe that couldn't work out for you. But, yeah, and there's a lot of unknown. And, you know, for most fans, for most teams in most cities where you've had, I don't know, what's that word, success, you don't feel the way a lot of Washington fans feel. right? You don't get nervous just at the mere idea that you haven't seen somebody yet. You go, great, their third stringer or a guy that's been kind of the semi backup all year is playing instead of a veteran that's been around that's done some things in the league in Derek Carr. But Washington fans, we've just seen it too many damn times. Too many Tommy DeVitos, too many, the Babe Laufenbergs back in the day or Cooper Rush just a few weeks ago, where a backup quarterback that you know is not any good all of a sudden plays like, you know, Joe Montana, Steve Young, and Tom Brady rolled into one.
Which I get, but this is not Cooper Rush, yeah? I mean, Cooper Rush has played a lot of NFL football. Mm-hmm. He had won a primetime game last year against the Vikings. Like, this is not that.
No, it's not. And there's a distinction, but still, it's what Tommy DeVito was before he walked down and beat Washington when they didn't play well. And this is in New Orleans. It's a road game. Washington's handled themselves really well on the road this year, and there's credit for that, which is something I think we underrate even a little bit, talking about a rookie quarterback. Now, he played in the SEC, so 110,000 people somewhere yelling at you. It's not that big a deal because he did that at Florida, at Georgia, at Alabama, and everywhere else. But still, this is the show, right? So, yeah, I mean, it's I'm still not slamming the gavel going after as good as that Tennessee game was, that this is the Washington team we saw all year. If you're bad, you're getting your butt kicked. I'm not there yet. I'm on my way. I got back in the car to drive down that road. That Cowboy loss, which we are probably, I don't say we, I am, I know, and maybe some fans are giving outsized import to into how far down the confidence ladder it knocked me. Does that make sense? Like, in other words, before they played Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, it was, hey, we're going to find out how is this team really ready for prime time? Are they ready to go compete at the highest level? The answer's probably not yet, which is okay. But you still go, I'll hang my hat on this. If you're an inferior team, and Dallas is, you're going to get your butt kicked. That loss kind of made me think, or made me feel, I hope they do, but I'm not ready to definitively slam the gavel and say that's what's going to happen.
Going back to your point about how they performed on the road this year, they're 3-3 on the road. They started out the season with their first road game in Cincinnati, which I still think was the best game they've played this year, and certainly Jaden Daniels' best game on the season. They then went to Arizona 6 days later. Remember, that was the same road trip by definition, yeah, because they actually didn't come home in the meantime. They had a great game in Arizona, beat them 42-14. Still probably their best win if you're looking at just records of teams.
Yeah, if you look at, you know, college football style, you know, the strength of schedule, that's your best W.
That's the one team that's a 500-ish club that they've beaten all season. But that little stretch of Bengals-Cardinals is probably their two best wins. They were 2-0 on the road.
Scored 80 points in those games.
Subsequently, though, they went to Baltimore and lost, but I thought they acquitted themselves really well.
Yeah.
They did not have Brian Robinson. They couldn't run the ball. And I don't mean that, like, they ran it poorly. They didn't even try to without Brian Robinson for whatever reason. But I thought Daniel staying in the pocket, hung in the game tough, and they had a chance against Baltimore. They were never at risk of winning that game, 30-23 loss.
Baltimore's better there, yeah.
But they didn't play poorly. They didn't, you know, turn the ball over. It wasn't a messy, like, you weren't ready for the lights kind of game. So they fell to 2-1. Then they were at the Giants. That was a game, the second game against the Giants, where I would say similarly to Baltimore, like, the result, 27-22 final, probably doesn't tell the whole story. The Giants were never really going to have a chance in that game, it didn't feel like. Washington was just a lot better.
Yep.
But they didn't dominate them. But that was their most recent road win, and then their last road game was, we were there, in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
They played that game well for three quarters. I thought went about as ideal as it could have. That was textbook execution for their plan. And then in the fourth quarter, everything got away, and they get blown out. And since have played the two home games and had a bye. So here we are. You're right. I mean, they've traveled well. I think they've done a really good job answering on the road early. In the Cincinnati game, they fell down 7-0. Like, they have done a really good job taking the field when it's really loud and the crowd's going nuts in a hostile environment. Daniels makes a play or two, and they get going. But Eckler's been a big part of that on the road. Like, they throw it to him.
Especially early. Yeah, it's a smart point.
They run it on the first drive. Not having him in New Orleans, which is still going to be pretty loud. I'm curious. I mean, what do you think the environment's going to be like here?
I think it's always loud. I think even if like a din somewhere else is 1.5 times there.
But, and you've been with me, so you know this. Like, we just talked to Mr. Brennan, actually,
yes,
who runs, Brennan's just stopped by and said hello, which is, the restaurant we'll be broadcasting from on Monday, in the French Quarter. But he's the third season ticket holder that I've talked to since we've gotten here, mm-hmm, who's not going to be at the game this weekend. And I'm sure everyone's busy and doing things. We're closing in on the holidays. But I think that's a theme.
It is.
The Saints are bad. Mm-hmm. It's a backup at most of their offensive positions as they're about to fall to 5-9 with an interim head coach. I think you're going to get like the C or D version of that environment in terms of road scares. Like it's just not going to be that raucous, I don't think.
So I hear you, but it's the city. It's a party no matter what happens. So it's like if anything good happens for New Orleans, it'll still end up being loud. But that dome is also it's everything's right on top of you, right? So like you and I having a conversation would still somehow make it to the field. Does that make sense? Like it's the whole thing is amplified and every sound reverberates and it's all just so loud that your point's right. It's not when they're 13-3 with Drew Brees throwing to, I don't know, Marcus Colston loud, but it's still going to be formidable, I think, if anything good happens.
What percentage of fans there do you think is going to be Commanders fans?
25? 30?
I'm thinking 35% or something.
So one of the things I wanted to bring up – oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, that was it. I mean, I think it's so hard to tell. Like, tomorrow's going to be, I think, the indicator when mm-hmm. we're walking Bourbon Street.
Yeah.
I also am remembering recent Saints games, and maybe I need to account for the fact it is almost the holidays. So it's tough to get away. You know, it's a weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have young kids like I do, it's kind of tough to get away for those couple of days, you know, this close to Christmas. So maybe there will be a little smaller traveling party from D.C., but I think that's combated by the fact that it's playoff time.
Yeah,
this is a really big damn game for them.
Yeah, it's go time. One of the things I was just going to bring up real quick that popped in my mind, I think one of the things that they've done so well, talking about Washington, in taking crowds out of the game. Now, listen, you're not going to take Philadelphia's crowd out for four quarters, but they did for three. Partly on offense, that no huddle, that kind of keep everything going so there's not that normal buildup on third downs and the like, as everyone's shuttling back and forth and we're going quick, even if you're using most of the play clock, it takes the crowd out of it to a degree. And it's something that I've kind of noticed previously, especially when they're working right. Like when they're themselves, like they were last week against Tennessee, they're ripping through first and second down, and it's a third and short, or even is a third down. Right? And so the crowd didn't have a chance to. Remember how for a while, Philadelphia pregame, they're fired up, they're making noise, they're, doing Philadelphia bits. Then for most of the first three quarters, not a lot of energy, not a lot of juice from the Philly crowd. It wasn't until finally they got that fourth down stop and, after a timeout leading up to some things, then Barkley breaks his run. That's when the crowd went nuts again. But we noticed it during in-game. We're like, they've kind of taken the crowd out of this thing in this boring Thursday night slugfest.
I also think just jumping on New Orleans, which I fully expect they'll do, they never take the ball first.
Mm-hmm.
They often kick off and defer. But I could absolutely see them getting a quick three and out and getting the ball or even turning New Orleans over maybe and getting the football. But a fast start is that here we go again. Like, we've been that fan base. We've seen that at home in a game in December when you're bad and you start slow against a good team or you start to assume the worst potentially. I could see something like that. I'm just looking at the projection on FanDuel right now for Jake Haener passing yards. 188.5 is what they're expecting from him. By the way, Jaden Daniels is set at 215.5. But they've got Haener at 188.5 for his passing projection.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen him at all? Like, have you watched him?
I have not seen, on Red Zone or whatever, I have not seen him in game.
So
this morning, Rattler.
I just jumped on YouTube and punched his name in, and I watched some highlights from college and a little bit of preseason stuff. He can actually move a little bit. Like, he's kind of sneaky athletic. He's not a big guy at all. He was listed at about 6'1", 200. I don't know that I buy that. He, to me, looks smaller than that. He looks like he's, 5'11", or something.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a little, a Taylor Heineke.
I was going to say a little Heineke-esque. Yeah.
But he is quick. Like, I'll bet you he rips off a scramble at some point tomorrow for 20-plus yards. Like, he's got a little nimbleness to him, and that would be the playmaking maybe that they need. Let's get an update next. We'll pass along what we've heard on Alvin Kamara, the running back for the Saints, who could be the one really good football player that is actually going to go this weekend. He has not been practicing this week. Also, debut for the Commanders, that's going to be one of the biggest storylines of the game, and for good reason. We're finally going to get to see the big trade chip, Marshawn Lattimore. You're listening to Grant and Danny. We are live in New Orleans. If you are on your way listening on the Odyssey app, if you're going to be here this weekend, you got to hit us up at Grant H. Paulson, Twitter and Instagram, at Funny Danny. Let us know where you'll be. Hopefully we can link up in the French Quarter. You're listening to The Fan. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan, live from New Orleans. Saints Commanders Sunday at 1 o'clock will be the debut game for Marshawn Lattimore in burgundy and gold. Didn't have this on the bingo card that when they acquired him right at the end of October into November, Danny, we would not see him make his first appearance with Washington until December 13th. But wouldn't you know it, this is as sports and NFL as it gets.
You couldn't write it better.
There's got to be a great storyline to go along with the big debut. He's back in New Orleans at the Superdome playing the only stadium he's ever called a home venue because this is the only team he's ever played for.
Yep.
And after nearly 100 games as a Saint, his first game with the Commanders will come against New Orleans. And it's a great opportunity for him to look really good. I mean, if you think about it, you could make your debut against Chris Olave and Derek Carr. Jake Haener is going to be throwing to Kevin Austin and Cedric Wilson and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who's had a couple of big moments. But otherwise, this wide receiver core is complete collection of unknowns.
Yeah, and guys on their second, third, fourth, fifth teams at times, if you think of the, you know, some of the journeymen there. But I was listening to Deuce McAllister talk to B. Mitch and Finley yesterday, and he gave some insight on Lattimore. First of all, spoke glowingly of him. Even though he's a guy that maybe not the most gregarious or out front in terms of a quote with the media, teammates love him, and he's, you know, pretty quiet. But in general, one of the things that McAllister said about Lattimore was he's the best when he's challenged. So in other words, it may not be as exciting to him to cover Marquez Valdez-Scantling or some of the other guys you mentioned, Stone Cold Kevin Austin, or some of the other dudes. You show him CeeDee Lamb. You get him A.J. Brown, you show him, you know, fill-in-the-blank superstar, that's when he plays his best, when it's he's going up against a true, honest-to-goodness number one, and he takes on that challenge really, really well. So you're hoping that that's kind of counterbalanced here with, yeah, this is your first impression with a new team, happens to be against your old team, maybe you could pretend that Valdez-Scantling is actually Justin Jefferson, or maybe you could pretend that he's one of these dudes. But to me, the whole point of acquiring Marshawn Lattimore, quite frankly, was for A.J. Brown. It was for CeeDee Lamb. It was for these guys in your division you're going to have to deal with who have torn you up at routine times. And the idea then by transitivity is it's going to allow you to stop other things. Because people have talked about their run defense a ton, and I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but bear with me. Their run defense has been the focal point, and it's bothered so many folks in our gig here in the D.C. area. And I'm going, they've basically decided, this is my view, they've decided the thing that's scariest to us is our cornerbacks and anybody in our secondary having to cover receivers. So that's what we're going to focus on. We will deal with the paper cuts. We will deal with getting gashed in the run game because the alternative is Ja'Marr Chase is one-on-one. It's a touchdown. I think Lattimore being here allows them to actually say, you know what, we'll bet big on a first down run and see if we can shove it and see if we can stop it.
It's
we'll
put 7 or 8 in the box. That regard, but yeah. I think that's a really like friendly way to explain why they're bad at stopping the run. Like that's the most Commander's nice way. It's like, yeah, you're heavy, Grant, but it's just because
your metabolism.
Exactly.
Well, like, I'm not saying they're good at it.
But my point is
I think they've chosen another path, and they don't do that well either.
That'd be nice. If they stopped the pass better, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's that they're committing all these resources to doing that, and so the run is a byproduct negatively. I think it's just that they don't have a whole lot they can hang their hat on. They have a few good defensive players. They don't have enough talent in the secondary. But here's where I'm with you completely. Marshawn Lattimore shouldn't need a ton of help.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, a Benjamin St. Juste or even Mikey Sanders still has played pretty well at corner, who they drafted to play in the nickel. Like, he is still learning the ropes, learning his way. Noah Igbinoghene was available for a reason and, you know, had bounced out around the league a little bit here. They just don't have the talent to normally throw a corner at a receiver and go, that's your problem, and now we're playing 10-on-10 everywhere else. Because that's really the dream. That's what you want.
Yep.
We're throwing one corner at one weapon.
You negate a chess piece with one of yours, and that's
exactly
better.
Yeah. And now I've got more guys to deal with everybody else. And Lattimore is the first guy that's really given them a chance, I think, to do that.
100%.
So I'm excited for that. But you said the reason they brought him in is for the number one receivers in the division, and I totally agree with that. I would also double down and say, though, as a reminder, the reason they traded for him was not really for this year. If he was just being acquired for this season and he was on a contract year, they would not have traded for him. They brought him in for next year and the year after, primarily. Like a two-year run here where they're going to have him for the remainder of his contract, and I view this year as a bonus. getting him back for this week against the Saints means you're going to have him for the final four games. He will play for you against New Orleans, against Philly, against Atlanta and Dallas. So this is, to me, just house money. And really, it's a two-year contract moving forward where you've got a corner one.
I agree with that. I mean, if you want to go somewhere this year, he can help you. And anybody that you play in the postseason is going to have somebody that scares the hell out of you. Green Bay might be the exception. They've got a few guys that are pretty good. You know, Watson goes deep. Reed, I think, is probably a little bit underrated. Kraft is a solid tight end. So I don't know exactly if you've got this thing that I'm talking about. But everybody else has a number one. As soon as I say the team name of Detroit, you know exactly who it is. You know who it is in Philadelphia. Seattle, you could pick. You got two guys that are unbelievable out there. Tampa Bay, Mike Evans, who ate their breakfast, lunch, dinner, all snacks, and then took further meals in advance from Washington in week number one. And then, of course, Minnesota, who's got the best receiver in the game. Anybody you might play in the postseason has somebody that you, quite frankly, with your current roster, minus Marshawn Lattimore, quite simply can't stop. Now, I'm not saying you stop those guys. Nobody stops those guys. But now you got a chance. Now you can punch back.
I hate the phrase must win when it's not actually and mathematically a must win.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the first time this season we're willing to say that? We should get into that next. And if we're not going to go there, because as a show, it's just a bit that we hate, well, then what do we call this game in New Orleans? It's Commanders Saints. We are here. By the way, I just saw people walk by in gigantic costumes, which was a wacky bit.
Just a New Orleans Friday.
We're just in a nice hotel, and people just walked by. Ryan, you didn't see it. You were staring at your food. But Darius looked over at me and pointed, like, why is that happening? I don't know, man. New Orleans. I mean, there was like a snake around someone's neck for some reason. I'm not really sure. You're listening to Grant and Danny on the Fan.